You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 16 May. Japanese preliminary GDP year-on-year, -2%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Norobe Ngqikelelo. We're going to be chatting healthcare stocks. We got the NHI signed into law yesterday by the president. We'd seen the stock sell off earlier in the week. Yesterday, they actually rallied a bit. Zach Callisto from Karoo, full year result, a really good set of numbers. I want to dig around. I mean, are they getting market share? Because I don't know where all these new additions are coming for in South Africa, because we ain't buying cars. Paul Hutchinson from 91, the quantitative analysis of investor behavior. Short answer, we are our own worst enemy. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Conspiracy theories abound, but has Eskom begun turning the corner? On Monday, it reportedly had so much power that it actually switched off some coal capacity. From Reuters, U.S. consumer inflation resumes downward trend as domestic demand cools. 3.4% for inflation for April, mostly rent and gas. Morning markets, stuff is green. We've got the S&P up 1.2%, NASDAQ up 1.5%. Over in the East, Sydney up 0.9%, Tokyo 0.75% higher, Hong Kong up 1.4%, and Tencent up 4.2% after some good results yesterday. Commodities, mostly green. In fact, all green, my bad. Gold, 2,394. Brent, 83.10. Platinum, 1,083. Palladium, 1,017. Rand, 18.27. Bitcoin 66,000, and top 40 opening call about 370 points to the upside. That's 0.5% green open.
MoneyWeb Now on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Lonrobe Ngqikelelo, Perpetua Investment Managers. Lonrobe, appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro there, we saw when it was announced the president would sign the NHI bill, National Health Insurance, the healthcare stocks, hospitals, medical aids, all of them got badly sold off on the JSE. They recovered a bit yesterday as he actually signed the bill. I mean, your take on the sector, I mean, is NHI an existential crisis to the healthcare stocks? Is it something which is so far away as to not be a worry, or perhaps legal challenges are going to kind of solve everything?
Hi, good morning, Simon. Yeah, it's interesting with this NHI because it's been a long time coming, and you know, it's obviously also been quite a many varying opinions, you know, on the bill. And I mean, the real question now, which is probably why the healthcare stocks maybe stabilized yesterday, is really whether or not the bill will now stand up to legal scrutiny. I think up until now, you know, it's kind of gone largely uncontested. And there have been obviously submissions by a lot of NGOs, mm-hmm. You know, medical aids, you know, South African Medical Association, etc., you know, that were, in their opinion, ignored in the final bill. You know, so now the constitutionality of the bill will have a chance to get tested. I think there's probably, so the one area of constitutionality that'll be tested is around the process that was followed, and mm-hmm. then I'd say the second is around whether it impinges on a lot of consumers and businesses' rights, so people who work in the sector. I mean, to give an example, you know, medical aids and the state roughly each spend about $250 billion. You know, the one covers 10 million people, the other covers, you know, the other 50 million people. Yeah. You know, so it just shows the extent of potential benefit deflation, you know, the other 10 million will now have to face. You know, and so the question really is now, are their rights now being impinged upon as a consequence of the bill?
Is it almost a sense of look through the bill and you know, go back to good old fashioned, I suppose, bottom up on the healthcare stocks on the JSE? The bill may come at some point. We don't know what that ultimate form will be. There are no timelines in the bill in itself. And actually just sort of do bottom up and look at healthcare stocks as they stand on their own.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely, you know, some there's definitely truth to that. I mean, you know, when you were looking at it, you know, it does look like you're being paid to wait in the hospital stock. So you're roughly the combination of dividend yields plus share buybacks. You know, it does mean that you'll probably, you know, earn, you know, 10, 11% per annum to kind of wait whilst the uncertainty. And there will be some growth. You know, the population continues to age and continues to need, you know, their services. You know, so so the returns you'll get even whilst you wait will be acceptable, but really for them to become, I suppose, outstanding or improve from that point onwards is that you do need, you know, some kind of clarity, and some kind of walking back of some of the most draconian aspects of the bill.
No, I take your point on that 100%, and I like the acceptable returns as opposed to excellent returns. We'll leave it there. That's from Robert Nakabela. He's Perpetua Investment Managers. And Robert, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our question today. LinkedIn and Twitter is around that. Are you concerned about the impact of NHI and healthcare on the JSE? You can have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Zach Callisto, CEO of Karooooo, full year results and fourth quarter results to end February. Lots of moving parts, but a short answer, earnings per share up 24%. Zach, appreciate the time. A strong quarter, a really strong year. And if we stick with Cartrack for a second, if I look out on the local South African landscape, vehicle sales not shooting the lights out. I mean, at best we can call them flat. Consumers under pressure. Is your growth coming from market share gain or where? Because it kind of belies what I see on the ground in South Africa.
Good morning, Simon. Our growth is coming very strong at the moment from our commercial customers, as we continuously allocate capital to improving our platform and our products. What we see is the amount of value we're giving to our commercial customers continues to increase, and there's just a very strong need in South Africa to stay competitive for our customers to digitalize their businesses. So we've seen very strong demand from South Africa. And I am of the opinion, and we certainly expect as the management team, that in FY, the remainder of this year, and specifically next year, we'll actually pick up momentum in South Africa despite the economic difficulties.
I take your point on that, and particularly, I mean, the one thing that stood out for me is as I'm reading through the results, I see your sales and marketing expenses both in around the low to mid-20s, and I think, yo, big numbers. But then you make the point that as a percentage of subscription revenue, it remains flat at 13%. In other words, as you spend into sales and marketing, you immediately see that uplift in subscription revenue.
Yes, there's a strong correlation. I would say it's not one-to-one, but the correlation is if we're able to spend the money on sales and marketing and are able to deliver the product to support that spend, then we will continue to see growth.
You mentioned the technology, and particularly with the sort of the commercial customers. You are integrating the Karooooo logistics technology stack into Cartrack platform, which I imagine goes a long way towards adding that extra value to the commercial customer.
Yes, most definitely. And you know what we've seen on that stack of the Karooooo logistics stack is when we took over this business, it was doing 3 million rand. It's now 100 million rand a quarter. So, you know, it's a running recurring revenue model. We, you know, we're in for, we expect to be no less than 400 million in this coming year. So it's picking up nice momentum and it's profitable. And that is also a sign of the value that we're giving to the customers and our financial discipline, now we're able to give those benefits and still remain profitable.
And it's the one thing, I mean, yeah, as I said up front, I mean, it's a tough economy out here in South Africa, but what we are seeing is online shopping, I mean, has absolutely boomed. It boomed in the pandemic, it came back a bit, but we see, you know, Amazon's arrived, we've got Temu in here, we see a whole lot more happening. That really is playing straight into the Karooooo logistics. I mean, imagine there's a lot more to it, but online must be a part of the Karooooo logistics business.
Yes, and I'm a strong believer that we saw a huge spike in the e-commerce, the demand for e-commerce during COVID. But I still believe we're in the very early stages of e-commerce.
Yeah,
I think it's only starting, really. So I think when we look back in 10 or 15 years' time, we're going to say in 2024, actually, e-commerce was nowhere.
Yeah, I tell you, 100%. I mean, I think we're in like single digits. I think the US is close to 20% of retail sales are e-commerce. We have a long way to go. Your commercial clients, how many commercial clients? I mean, I think it was 120,000-odd commercial clients you now got across the group, most in Europe.
So we've got 121,000 commercial customers. Your average commercial customer is an SME customer within the region of about 12 vehicles. But we do have very large customers. You know, we've got quite a few hundred customers that have got more than 500 vehicles.
And those customers are, I mean, you mentioned SME, you mentioned some of the much larger. There's no sort of concentration in terms of industry or even geographic regions in the space.
No. So we're very fortunate. We cut across many different industries. And our platform has developed in such a way that we can deal with industries ranging from logistics to pharmaceutical companies to refrigeration transport to emergency services. So we deal with a large spectrum of different industries, and we continuously invest to make our business intelligence very industry specific. So we're very much focused now on really being able to be experts on 15 different industries.
We'll leave that there. That's Zach Callisto, CEO of Karooooo. Appreciate the early morning time.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Paul Hutchinson, 91 sales manager. Paul, good to chat again. 30th annual quantitative analysis of investor behavior. Bit of a mouthful, but a study to the end of 2023 shows that, short answer, investors underperform markets. We are not as smart as we think we are.
Correct. And it's a fascinating study, and I look out for it every year. And every year, I hope that we've learned something from the previous year. And unfortunately, every year, Dalbar, who's the financial services market research firm that undertakes this study, reconfirms that investor behavior, the way they buy, sell, or switch into or out of unit trust funds, costs them. And simply, what that means is that their actions result in them underperforming the actual performance of the fund, and in some years, quite materially. And what's interesting is that, for example, if we take the calendar year 2023, the US equity market was up a magnificent 26%.
Yeah.
And the average US equity fund investor only realized just under 21%. So their behavior cost them a significant 5.5%. And if you just think of the compounding effect of that over the long term, it really results in a significant change in the retirement that you can come to expect. And what's, I think, equally fascinating is that the underperformance tends to be more material in strongly positive markets. So when the equity market is up significantly in the US, the degree of underperformance by collective investment scheme or unit trust investors is more material than in periods where markets do less well. So investors aren't benefiting from market performance to the extent that they potentially should over the longer term.
And 5.5%, as you say, a massive number if you compound it over decades of investing. Do we see similar in fixed income and bond market? Because this is equity returns. Same in the fixed income?
So they look at the US bond market, and there, obviously, US bond returns have been materially lower. In 2023, the US bond market only delivered a 5.5% return. Mm-hmm. But the average investor return was half that, less than half of that, at 2.6%. So the effect is similar, and it goes to, I think, investors thinking that they can time the market. They can exit and enter the market at the right time. And the evidence certainly suggests that they can't and reinforces that message consistently over time.
And then it becomes as simple as stop trying to be clever and do the old-fashioned, which is, you know, buy the market consistently and do nothing.
Correct. So that's one of the key messages that we think investors need to hear. And one of the reasons why they need the support of a qualified financial advisor, because the key message is to stay the course, to stay invested and reinforce this prudence of a long-term buy and hold approach. And it really goes to, I think, all of us underappreciating how long we should be invested for. Mm. So if you take someone who's entering the workforce today, they potentially have a 40-year time horizon, but actually it's 40 years of accumulating assets, and then they can expect to decumulate those assets in retirement over the following 30 years. So someone entering the workforce today probably has a 70-year time horizon. And then if I look at myself, I'm 56, I think, so I can see the promised land.
Yeah.
And everybody I talk to says, well, you've got 4 or 5 years of investment time horizon left. And in my mind, I'm going, no, I have a 35-year investment time horizon. So even now, at 56, I shouldn't be trying to time the market. I can continue to stay invested because I have a long-term investment time horizon, even from this age.
That's a great point, because I think we do. We kind of think that our investing is sometime around 60, 65. That's it. We clock out of the office for the last time, and now we don't have investments. We start drawing down. We are drawing down on our pot of money, but it is still out there. It is still being invested. And maybe we tweak it in terms of risk profile, but it's still in the market.
Correct. And that's the key point. Yes, you may want to de-risk it to a degree, but recognize that when you retire, you probably have a 30-year investment time horizon. Therefore, you need to be invested in growth assets because you need to factor in the debilitating effects of inflation. And who knows what inflation is likely to be in 10, 15, or 20 years' time. So you do need that exposure to growth assets, even in retirement.
Going back to the financial advisor, they become almost, I mean, they're there to help you with that de-risking and before that with the risking apart, but they're almost like your therapist. I mean, they're talking you off the cliff edge from time to time, I imagine.
Absolutely. And it's this whole counseling of investors. And this enters this whole realm of behavioral finance. And one of the other key points is for investors to be aware of the negative impact of behavioral influences. And that really is things like loss aversion. We kind of feel the pain of loss more than the pleasure of gain. In a market correction, you need to be able to just stay the course, stay invested. And that's where a financial advisor can counsel you and explain that over the long term, a short-term market correction doesn't materially impact you if you have a long-term investment time horizon. I quite often like to point to the chart of, let's call it the S&P 500. And if it starts bottom left and ends top right over any meaningful time period, and that's telling you that over time, equity markets go up. And you just need to be able to mentally look through this admittedly very painful period of potentially minus 20, but it's only when you sell when you're 20% down that you capitalize that loss. And then it's very difficult to determine when to re-enter the market, because a buy and sell strategy means that you need to make two decisions. One, you need to decide when to exit the market. And then equally importantly, you need to decide when to re-enter the market. And the probability of getting both of those decisions right, or relatively right, is, I would argue, quite high.
Yeah, I take your point in that. And it's what I often say to folks. If you're looking at a short-term chart, just zoom out because the noise kind of fades
100%.
Away. Paul Hutchinson, 91 Sales Manager. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Jimmy Muyoha yesterday. We were talking about the Anglo restructure. This is their deal, not the BHP proposed one. In Exxon, they will exit Anglo Platinum and De Beers and Coke and Coal and others. We asked if this is a good strategy. Half said no, it is messy. Third said it looked good. And the rest of you actually just preferred the BHP group offer. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Afrimat results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.